Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
That's right, it's time for Talk of the Rock here on KMXT. I'm your host, Davis, and I have two guests in the studio with me today from the Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative, or the co-op as it's affectionately known. So I'll let them introduce themselves. We'll start closest to me here. Rob, go for it.
Hi, I'm Rob Stauffer. I'm the project director for the store.
And hi, I'm Myra Scholes. I'm the chair of the board of directors for the co-op.
Awesome. Thank you both for being here. Our listeners might remember that Myra was just recently on a show with Ian for Talks Around the Farm Table, which KMXT airs once a month, and he was focused on the food co-op as well. We're going to try to keep our conversation today a little bit different, but I'm sure there will be some overlap because everyone wants to hear about the co-op's big move coming up to the marketplace. Before we get into that, though, could you kind of just give me a little bit of backstory on the journey the co-op has made in this last 10, almost 11 years now, right, Rob?
Oh, yeah. So started in 2016. It was came out of a community work group. People wanted to have some kind of local control over food. And so they came up with the cooperative model. And the co-op originally started with produce stands. They were pop up at different locations. And then ultimately Wednesdays down at the marketplace back when it was the old AC building. So we've kind of come full circle. We went from having those Wednesday markets, and they were a blast. It was a beautiful summer, all kinds of people coming in to get produce. And then now we're moving in.
Very cool. Yeah. And Myra, I know you talked about this as well, but the uniqueness of the co-op model, the food co-op model here in Kodiak really is like a successful rural model that has seemed to has been adapted to fit Kodiak's needs.
Definitely.
How would you sort of break that down or describe the model that you use here in Kodiak?
Well, in the food co-op sphere, there's pretty set steps that people generally go through, like A through E in opening a co-op. And a lot of those rely a lot more on a larger customer base and a larger population. And our co-op has been really intentional about kind of growing slowly and growing with our community, and that has been integral to our success, I think, and also has been noted by other communities, especially rural communities in Alaska, and hopefully we see some other communities get online with co-ops now that we have kind of forged a model. The other kind of co-ops in the more national groups call us the Wild West co-op.
I like that reference. Yeah, in the Talks Around the Farm Table show, I heard that. That was pretty fun. But you're up to more than 700 members. How many do you have today at this point? What's the latest count, if you had to guess?
If I had to guess, I would say we were about 730.
So, I mean, that is a huge number for a co-op of your size in the community of Kodiak. But, you know, that's still roughly less than... it's definitely less than 10% of our island's population, right?
Yep.
I mean, taking that into account. So how are you able to kind of really utilize those members and like make that work with a core group of, you know, 700 folks? I mean, what are you charging them? How are they supporting you? And is it enough, I guess, at this point?
Yes. So originally the board decided that having a lifetime membership, $150, that was going to, we had benchmarks of members that we wanted to get to achieve, you know, show that we're a viable business. And that money basically came in, went into the bank. It showed that we had a backing of the community was the key thing. We wanted a business model that was going to sustain as it grew, you know, we don't have the membership as a recurring membership. That's common with co-ops. It's really important to their cash flow. We've just kind of gone on a different route where just simply that one lifetime that shows the support. The benefits people get out of it, we have, you become an owner of the co-op. And so you have a say in the leadership, you get to vote for the board. We have a 9-member board serving 3-year terms. Anyone can run for the board. And then anyone who has a membership has one vote, you know, to go towards who's running for the board. within the store. We have some discounts for members, and then we also have like our produce box subscriptions. We have that for members. And then we have a rewards program because we want to be for everybody in the community. We know it can take time for people to get together. 150 can be a lot for people. So we want everyone to be able to shop there. We have a rewards program that's two tiers. We have general customers, and then we have members, you know, who get a little bit, they accrue a little faster, and that's towards coupons for discounts.
So going back to kind of to that model of just a one-time lifetime membership fee, though, I mean, so you're not necessarily, as you said, you're not looking to your members to continually provide you, you know, membership fees and revenue from that. Instead, it sounds like you're maybe more relying on the goods and services that you can offer and, you know, making more revenue as you expand those goods and services.
Correct. So their support's really coming in from the shopping. You know, the more they shop, the more we can grow. And then that way, they're not having to deal with that, you know, continuous expense every year to add on top of groceries.
Well, and also you're allowing folks who aren't members to come in and shop there, of course, too, right? I mean, yep. You don't have to be a member to shop at the co-op, which also brings in, yeah, some revenue from visitors, tourists, folks who maybe aren't members who don't live here on the island.
Correct. It gives us a really broad base, basically trying to be as inclusive in the community as possible.
And tell me a little bit more about, you mentioned the rewards program. I know that's relatively new. A lot of course, different organizations from, you know, coffee shops to bookstores and whatnot do their own rewards program. How is yours sort of unique and different?
Actually, it's a pretty common reward system. Every dollar spent gets you points. Members accrue at a higher rate of points. And then after a certain amount, then you get coupons. Right now we're doing 5% off coupons at 250 points. Not necessarily unique, but it does give that, you know, that feedback that, hey, the more you're in here, the more it benefits you, you know, as the customer. So.
And talking about adding new things, Myra, I think you were talking before with Ian about some sort of deli and more goods coming into the co-op. I know folks are excited about that. Can you kind of talk about maybe what's being added to the co-op later this year?
Well, one of the things we're focusing on is ensuring that we have tiers of our products for all levels of all budgets. And so we want to make sure that anyone can come in and shop with us and that we don't feel like we're exclusive in any way. Rob's been working really hard on that and also probably has better information than me.
Okay, fair enough. Pivot back to Rob for that one.
Yeah, so we're right now, you know, if you come into the current co-op, heavy on organic foods. We really try to curate what we have in there. We try to have a lot of fun, interesting things for people. But it can be a little spendy for the basics, you know, and we have to acknowledge that. And so what we've been trying to do is find more wholesalers where we can get, bring in more value, you know, so that, you know, maybe we're the one-stop shop for some people that, you know, we can find that right value for everybody, or maybe we make ourselves more accessible. So you might not be one-stop shop. You may utilize the rest of our food ecosystem to meet your budget, but you can get those things that matter to you and hopefully at a pretty good price. So
then maybe a little bit more focus on what I would call specialty items, like your fancy cheeses, your quality meats, local seafood, if you're going that route, maybe.
Yeah. So we'll kind of have two ends of it. You know, we have what'll be all the fancy and fun stuff, you know. We'll definitely our current, like our organics, our grass fed, our pasture raised, we'll have all of that. But then we'll also have, we're looking at crops that may not need as much necessarily be organic, you know, such as rices and beans, you know, stuff like that. It's finding what works for people's food values. What are they looking for? And offering options on those that we don't currently have. Meats that, you know, trying to have more affordable meat. That's a huge thing. You know, I mean, that's such a key part of the diet. And we want to make sure that we can fit that while also promoting like Alaska seafood as one of your most healthy, wonderful meats that you can add. So, and making that accessible here in the community. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thinking about, you know, the co-op's part of the co-op's mission has always been trying to encourage folks to buy local, right? I mean, obviously, there are still limitations and challenges to that in terms of how much locally produced food is even offered here on the island. And then also, you know, as a business, as a co-op, trying to work with those producers and fishermen and growers to try to get their goods in for sale in your business. So could you kind of talk about, you know, maybe some of the barriers that prevent you from offering more and how you're trying to sort of change that going forward?
That one's a great one. So when it comes to produce, obviously our growing season is our single biggest barrier. But it also, it's the perception of the ability to grow here. A lot of people find it intimidating. And what we're trying to do is create an environment where people can grow stuff, have an opportunity to sell it through us and get that feel. You know, can they make it viable? Is it something they can do on the side? Is it something they want to ultimately do as, you know, be a local farmer, right? Because of the short growing season, that can sometimes not seem very viable, and yet we have some very successful farmers in Kodiak. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make it an option for people. We want to be able to buy from as small producers as we can. Potential barriers to that are really making sure that people, you know, it's a business, right? And so you have to be able to prepare to handle it as a business, have to meet state requirements for it. And then, you know, we're selling food onto the public, so we have to ensure that we're selling a safe product. So it's really, it's educating people. That's the biggest barrier, helping them understand that there may not, the barriers might not be as bad as they think. It may be pretty easy to overcome some of those, to learn about them. And then seafood, probably the biggest ones that we've run into, you know, it's small producers have always struggled with processing, but we now have those processing options here in Kodiak. So they're able to get a quality product and then offer it on for resale through us. So that's becoming a more viable option. There was always a perception that people wouldn't buy fish, you know, that's available out there in the ocean because we can all go get it, except that we don't all have a boat to go get halibut. We don't all have the ability to go and get a bunch of sockeye salmon to put in the freezer. And so we found that it actually sells really good. People really want local fish. And you mm-hmm. go any other fishing community in the United States, and they always have lots of the seafood available. You know, so we want to make that feel accessible and feel normal.
Is a seafood market in the future for the co-op? I mean, would that be something that you could do?
We'll definitely have frozen local options. Moving to a fresh option, we have some ideas. We want to, you know, I mean, we have Kodiak oysters, and then we have a lot of Alaska oysters. We would love to get that into the co-op, making sure that it's viable for both us and the producer. That'll be the challenge for us to overcome. But yes, the more seafood we can offer, yes, the better. It's such a quality protein.
Well, and like you were saying, I mean, just the difference between live and frozen, right? I mean, when you are selling seafood that's been processed and filleted very nicely and, you know, vacuum sealed, that is still, though, very different quality than getting a live fish or crab, right?
Yep.
And that would be really cool to see, because I know, as you were saying, limited options here in Kodiak for fresh live seafood mm-hmm. that you can get, you know, right off the boat pretty much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So talking a little bit more about those challenges too that folks may not think about, obviously when you're dealing with seafood and dairy products, anything that really has a shelf life and is bound to spoil, you have to find the appropriate storage space for it. So tell me about your current operation, where you are located, and how, you know, you're working within those spaces to store goods.
Current operation, we are bursting at the seams. It's a wonderful location. It served us well for growing, but now we're at the point where we just don't fit. So our frozen has been very limited. We found some offsite storage, you know, that's helped. Which makes it tough, like buying from a small producer, you know, let's say a small fisherman who's, you know, doing a sockeye salmon or halibut, they have to process, you know, a reasonable amount to make it worthwhile. And then we struggle to be able to buy that full amount, you know, because we don't have places to store it. We're still a very tiny part of the Kodiak food market, you know, and so we can only store so much and only sell it so fast. And so we don't want it sitting in the freezers. We don't want it getting old, you know, and then offering a lower quality product. And so, yeah, there's a couple different logistic challenges there that we're hoping that this new location with all the extra space, we're going to have more access to the market to move it faster, but also to be able to store so it can be more worthwhile for a producer to come to us and say, hey, I'm looking to fish this. How much of it would you want?
Myra, did you have anything to add on that too? I don't want to ignore you.
Not about seafood specifically, but I think one of the barriers for produce especially is the perception that you need to be like a full-scale farmer to sell to us. And even just looking at your growing space and setting aside 4 square feet to grow for the co-op, like we can buy small quantities and we can buy what you have. We have that ability, and we really want to provide a stable market to encourage people to begin growing and begin growing more than they just need in their household to share with the community. So we want to encourage people to come in and talk to us if you have space. You know, everyone's microclimate is different and grows things differently. And what if you have zucchinis coming out the ears, your neighbor might have celery coming out their ears. And so really contributing to our ecosystem in that way, I think having a lot of people doing a little bit is far more realistic and more beneficial than having one person doing a lot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, less large-scale production and more smaller operations doing smaller production. On that note, can we talk a little bit more about the relationship between the co-op and growers, right? I mean, you mentioned before, obviously, there's requirements that you have. There's limitations that the grower has in terms of, you know, how much they can produce in the short growing season that we have here. But you know, if someone is looking to provide a handful of zucchinis to you, I mean, are you looking for a certain amount and consistency to be able to make that viable? Are you allowing them to sell that to you at a reduced rate because they can only offer you like five? I mean, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, what are the considerations there?
No, those are excellent questions. We are looking for some kind of like more than a one-off sale, although we realize with some of the crops here, it may very well be a one-time harvest, you know, and so looking for a quantity that's viable for both of us. It doesn't have to be huge, you know, for the example of, let's say you have carrots, you know, having a dozen bunches of carrots, you know, which would be a small plot, you know, would be a reasonable amount to buy. Things that people would be prepared for is we'd like to know a bit about the growing process. We'd like to know, you know, what they've done, you know, soil-wise, things like that. You know, we want the ultimate consumer to feel comfortable with what they're getting. You know, that that somebody, that it's their kind of pride and joy that they're putting effort into it and they want a quality product going out. So think about it as if you were selling face-to-face at a farmer's market, and then we're providing that face-to-face for you. So
that's a great way to think about it, especially because you offer the year-round option for that, not just the seasonal summer farmers market option.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's huge. I mean, again, talking about locally produced food, I mean, I personally shop at the co-op sometimes, and I, you know, always look at your produce section because it's amazing to me the variety that you can find at the co-op compared to some of the other options in town. It is quite something, I will say, and I'm just curious then, like, how do you go about, you know, procuring and selecting, you know, the produce and the options that you do provide in the store?
So we have a produce coordinator, Heather. So she works with one of our main wholesalers, Organically Grown. They're a West Coast wholesaler. They buy from a lot of West Coast farms. They do bring in, like, as you see, we have avocados and we'll have other things that are not necessarily grown on the West Coast, but it's heavy on the West Coast small farm producers, who grow an amazing variety. We also purchase from like an online farmer's market, you know, out of Seattle. And I'm always surprised at what all they're growing out of there, what all they offer, the wide range of varieties. So, you know, Heather is always creative. She wants people to have a varied diet of vegetables and stuff. She is a huge advocate for fennel.
But yes.
Amazed at how much she's been able to get people to actually enjoy that. But yeah, so we try to keep that variety. We want people to experience their food. We want people connected to their food. And it's when you have those exciting things, it makes people want to come in and experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about the big move, because I know that's on everybody's mind. So you're currently located on, is it Selig Street? Selig?
Correct.
Yeah. Selig yeah. Street. I personally am having a hard time describing it to folks who haven't been there, but hopefully folks know where you're located, because I'm assuming, yeah, you've been around long enough. But anyway, so later this month, you are closing that location, so folks will no longer be able to shop there, and then you're moving into the marketplace. So let's start with sort of the dates and the transition. So how is that going to go? What are the key dates that folks should be aware of?
Okay, so February 21st, Saturday, we will be closing the store there on the Selig Street, which is, for those that don't know, downstairs from Kodiak Furniture around the back. And then, so we'll have a week where we'll be moving stuff out of there and then getting it down to the marketplace. And then we're going to spend another week down in the marketplace getting situated. So we'll open again on March 7th. And that'll be, the main store will open. The deli option, that's going to come later in probably May, maybe early June. We have a bit more we have to do with that one.
Okay. And the space you're moving into, for folks who aren't familiar, was occupied by the Emerald Isle grocery store marketplace there. What are the benefits of moving into that space? And remind folks, you know, that is also the area that faces towards the docks there and has some outdoor seating and some other things going on over there as well.
So big thing being downtown. I mean, downtown used to have most of our grocery stores. I grew up here. I got to bag groceries as a kid at Crafts and Son. And it just, that was our key thing before Safeway came in. So it's nice to get a grocery store back downtown, have that food available. Being in the marketplace, it's feeling like a community space. I mean, you've got Barefoot Bakery across the hall. We got the bookstore, the toy store. We got Anko. There's a coffee kiosk coming in. There's a couple other small businesses. We have Flo with their adventure gear. It's just a fun environment. So being down amongst that, where people can come in and do a variety of shopping, that's going to be huge. Being next to the harbor and being accessible, like right now we have probably one person a week who's a true walk-in from just anywhere. You know, you come to us because you're really trying to come to us. Being downtown where it's just going to be so many people coming and going.
Right. I see what you're saying. So you're also alluding to obviously the benefits you're going to receive from the summer tourist season, because of course there's going to be cruise ships just down the road from you. And those folks naturally walk or take the bus right to your door potentially.
Yep. Yeah. And then everyone on the boats, everyone at the hotels, a lot of people that live in the downtown area that may not have vehicle access uptown regularly. We feel like we just have a much broader market and just a better way to get local seafood and produce out there. So,
yeah, that's very exciting. I know, as you said, the deli is coming later. So when you do move to the new location in the marketplace in March, what can folks expect when you reopen? Are you going to have the exact same goods? Will there be more of a change? What are you thinking?
So we'll have everything we currently have on hand, but we'll build out. So we're going from like 1,300 square feet to 4,500 square feet. So there'll be about three times the product. Mm-hmm. We have a variety of wholesalers we're bringing online, so there'll be a lot more options, both in the organic and the non-organic. When it comes to the deli, that one's kind of bringing a lot of new things for us. You know, we don't really have a lunch trade, and so we know downtown there'll be much greater options for that. Our Instagram, Pinterest boards, all those are so full of so many exciting, fun options. We haven't like narrowed it down, you know, but eventually we'll have to narrow it down to what we're going to provide. And we're looking at healthy, fun, flavorful, trying to have variety. You know, it's we don't want to compete with, you know, other businesses that are doing similar. And so we want to make sure that we're filling other niches in our food system, which we feel there's a lot of potentials, you know. And so as we get closer, we'll start putting out teasers and maybe even testers, you know, where people can give us some feedback. So.
All right. That's great. Myra has already talked about cheeses and dairy products. Can you maybe expand a little bit more? I know folks already come to you for like very specific ice cream, very specific cheeses, very specific milk products.
Well, something that we want to be able to provide with the deli is bringing in some of those quality cheeses and meats and then breaking them down ourselves, and that will provide a more affordable option that is available from the deli. And we will continue to provide local dairy from the Last Small Farm, which is available in our current location again now. We have skyr and milk and that is heat treated raw milk, so it's under a raw certification but is heat treated in the same way that pasteurized milk is, and so there's a distinction there. It is treated, and yeah, hopefully continuing with those options. Kelly has lots of stuff going on with the local dairy, and those I think we see just kind of seasonal availability that you get with a small business, a small farm, as far as what is offered and in what seasons, and goat versus cow. Yep.
Indeed. Yeah. There is a distinction between goat milk and cow's milk if you haven't tried it before. To that point though, with Kelly and the Last Small Farm, I'm also wondering, you know, as the co-op is getting ready to expand in size and offerings, are you receiving feedback from some of your partners, your growers and producers about, you know, maybe they're trying to expand with you and utilize this new space that you might be offering?
Yes. Yeah. We've had feedback both from our growers and from the dairy. our next is to reach out with our fishermen and look at what are our expanded offerings. But I think everyone sees the potential for it, you know, being able to scale up operations and think more about, you know, being able to dedicate more time to growing. Because outside of a couple of people, it's a very part-time thing, you know. And so now here's an option where you can dedicate some of your summer to it and have it be viable. So,
yeah. You were talking earlier too about, you know, meats, and there is like a not as well known, I guess I'll say, local meat, you know, offerings, right? Of course, there's the buffalo herd, the bison from Old Harbor, and I know that Melissa Burns uses some of that over at Nuniak. But we also have, you know, some beef cattle here on our side of the island as well. And I'm just wondering, yeah, is there any push maybe to find local meat sources or partner with that?
We would love that. Now, that one has the biggest barrier. The requirement that it's a USDA butchered animal.
Right.
And Alaska just doesn't have the facilities right now. That's not to say that we can't have facilities in the future. And I know they have looked into it, like both with the bison and the beef. It's an issue of cost. If we can either get around that with the USDA looking at relaxing local options, which they have done in like with chickens. Chicken has become easier to get a hold of, but it's just harder with the beef and the bison.
Right.
Yes, if we can get that in the store, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, the USDA processing requirements there, that is a big one for sure. Talking about chickens, though, I mean, you have also gotten more eggs, it seems like. Are you getting locally grown, locally hatched eggs as well?
Yes, we are. And those we've been trying to work with people on small production. Alaska does have, you know, through the what used to be called the cottage foods and now is the home foods law. We can sell local eggs. You'll see them separated from our other eggs. They have to be off to the side so that people are aware of that. But yes, that has been fun to have a variety of local chickens. And the chickens are all a variety of themselves, too. It's not just your single, you know, single breed layers. We get a wide range. So.
Great. All right. We're getting close to the end of our time already, so I want to make sure we leave enough time to give all the basics for folks. So we already kind of went over the dates there, Rob, but for folks who are, again, anticipating this arrival of the co-op in the marketplace, it sounds like your grand opening is slated for March 7th, but you are planning to have your annual meeting before then. So could you talk more about how members can participate in the annual meeting that's coming up?
Yeah, we're planning to do our members-only preview at our annual meeting. So members are invited to join us on the evening of the 6th, time TBD, and it will be a preview of the store the day before it opens. We'll have an annual report that goes out to all members the week previous to that, and then that will also finalize our voting. We have 3 board seats up per year, and we have 1 unoccupied board seat right now. So if you're interested in board service, please reach out kodiakharvest@gmail.com, and we can get you more information and an application. And so voting will end on the 6th during the annual meeting, and the new board seats will be announced.
Cool. And that email address you gave is probably the best one for information anyway, generally speaking, if folks have questions or anything.
That is our board email. So if you're trying to get a hold of the board, if you want to get a hold of Rob, you can email info.
Yep. info@kodiakharvest.org.
Okay. And of course, stay tuned to the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op's Facebook page, the Instagram, the socials. They'll have all that information about the dates. But the new Kodiak Food Co-op is coming to the marketplace March 7th. Mark your calendars, and March 6th is their annual meeting. Thank you to Rob and Myra for joining me today on Talk of the Rock.
Thank you for having us.